Hi, welcome back to another episode of You the Mother podcast by Abby Williams, a space dedicated to supporting, empowering, and connecting all parents in all seasons of parenthood. You can find more supportive content over on Instagram and TikTok at You the Mother, and be sure to check out youthemother.com, where you can reach out to work with me one-on-one or sign up for my group coaching. The Estrangement Project is going to Costa Rica in November. You can find all the information and the link in the description of this podcast. There will be healing and transformative workshops, a waterfall, beach, and ziplining through the jungle. So make sure that you go grab one of the few spots that are left. And in today's episode, I am welcoming on Dr. Pooja Lakshman. Dr. Pooja is a board-certified psychiatrist, New York Times contributor, and a leading voice at the intersection of mental health and gender, focused on helping women and people from marginalized communities escape the tyranny of self-care. In 2020, Dr. Pooja founded GEMMA, a physician-led women's mental health education platform centering impact and equity. She maintains an active private practice where she treats women struggling with burnout, perfectionism, and disillusionment, as well as clinical conditions like depression and anxiety. Having gone down the rabbit hole of extreme wellness herself, real self-care is Dr. Pooja's answer to the juice cleanse, the gratitude list, and the bubble bath. Not only to care for ourselves for real, but in turn to transform our broken culture. Dr. Pooja talks all about real self-care in today's episodes. She talks about how we can create boundaries with ourselves, how we can move past guilt and treat ourselves with compassion, and some of the real strategies that we can implement with ourselves to provide more peace. You can find Dr. Pooja over on Instagram at Women's Mental Health Doc. She's also on Twitter at Pooja Lakshman. And be sure to grab her book, Real Self-Care, wherever you buy your books. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and if you do, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me, and I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started in supporting you, the mother. Dr. Pooja, welcome to the You the Mother podcast. I am so excited to be welcome you back. You joined me when I was formerly Mimosas with Moms, like a long time ago, a couple years ago, I think. And so welcome back. Thank you for joining me again. We are going to be talking about self-care, and you recently just wrote a book, and I'm so excited for you. Congratulations. I'm excited to have this conversation. But first, tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's such a pleasure to be back, Abby. I loved our conversation last time, so I'm glad to have part two, season two. I am Dr. Pooja Lakshman. I am a psychiatrist specializing in women's mental health. And in my clinical practice, I take care of women who are struggling with things like postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, which is what we talked about last time. I'm also a contributor for the New York Times and the founder and CEO of the women's mental health community, GEMMA. And I wrote a book that is just out now. It's called Real Self-Care, a transformative program for redefining wellness, crystals, cleanses, and bubble baths not included.
Yes.
And so I can tell you all about that subtitle and kind of what led me to writing this book. So maybe I can start there.
Yeah, let's dive into that.
Awesome. So I, I'm 39 years old now, mm-hmm. and I am, like I said, I'm a psychiatrist. I've spent almost the past decade taking care of women struggling with mental health issues. But this book really comes from a personal place. I, as a psychiatrist in, 2011, 2012, going through my psychiatry training, I really was feeling disillusioned with what was happening in psychiatry. You know, it was just sort of like somebody comes into the ER and, they don't have housing and the only thing you could offer is medication or psychotherapy. But the thing this person really needs is housing. Or you know, the patient who lost childcare for the third time that month and is being fired from her job. You know, it's like, okay, well, what am I going to do with this? So it's sort of like, as a young physician, I was just feeling really powerless because I went into medicine thinking naively that I was going to help people, when in fact, everywhere I turned, it was just sort of like these systems that we live inside, whether it's like toxic capitalism, whether it's racism, whether it's sexism and patriarchy, were constantly beating my patients down. And then me personally, I'm a South Asian woman. I'm first generation. My parents are immigrants. I sort of had built my life up until that time following all the rules. You know, I went to med school. I was a good Indian girl. I got married. I went to Ivy League schools. And, you know, I found myself at age 27, 28. It was like I had checked all the boxes off. And I was just sort of like, okay, well, now I guess I can be happy. You know, now it's time for me to be happy. And I didn't know how to be happy. Like, I just couldn't, I was completely empty inside. And so I was really angry. So I left my marriage. I moved into a commune in San Francisco that was focused on female orgasm. And then I dropped out of my residency. You know, my Indian parents were really, really happy. I previously
they were like, are you okay?
Yeah. All of my friends were like, what happened to Pooja? And, you know, but it was like I was on this search for answers, and I spent 2 years diving deep into like spirituality and meditation. And I did, during that time, I worked at the Rutgers Orgasm Lab, where we put women in fMRI machines and looked at their brain during orgasm. And now part of my clinical practice is I do take care of women who are struggling with vulvodynia or pelvic genitopelvic pain disorders. So it was, you know, it was a important time in my life. But by the end of those 2 years, I realized that this one wellness practice, this one group, this one guru was not going to be the solution to my problems. And I was deeply heartbroken. But when I came out of it, you know, when I had to go into my own treatment for depression, and I had the privilege and the resources to be able to do that. But I realized that there is no one right answer to wellness, and it can never come from the outside. It always has to come from within. You can't outsource your decision making. And that's really kind of the seeds of this book came from that place, and kind of really wanting to like set the record straight and provide a path forward that is deeply personal, but also sustainable, and is also, you know, acknowledges that there is no magical panacea. It's just really just making hard choices in your life. And that's it. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy, but it is worth it.
Your story is so powerful. And I'm so glad that like you went on this journey and can then gift the world like this incredible knowledge, right? You know, of, because I think so many of us get caught in some of these systems, right? That our worth is linked to achievements. We have to check all these boxes, you know, and I think a lot of us are in that place. And now, you know, maybe you went to school, you got married, you had the baby, and now you're supposed to be happy and you're not. Totally. You know, and what is happiness? What is self-care? You know, I think that what you were just saying, that like this is just so individual and you really have to dig deep inside. I wish that we were being taught this from day one, right?
Yes.
You know, yes. And like yes. how different our life would be had those been some of the conversations like from childhood on, instead of now. You are going to be going to Ivy League schools and doing all these great things like a good Indian girl should, you know, like you said, right? And right. You're like, okay, yes, I will. And you go and you do those things. And then what, you know? So I guess like, how do we start if like we don't have this foundation of what happiness means, what taking care of ourselves means? Where do we start now as 30, 40, 50-year-old women, you know, who are well into our life?
Yeah. Well, the good news is that you can start
right where you are. Right.
And actually the truth is that's the only place to start. Mm-hmm. Because running away from it, throwing your life, I always like to say, like, no, you don't need to get divorced. I mean, you can get divorced if you want to, but you don't need to quit your job, run away. I did all of that. It doesn't actually work, right? Like, the only place that you can start is in your real life. And so the way that I conceptualize this in real self-care is I talk about faux self-care versus real self-care. And so faux self-care is a method. So faux self-care is like going to get a massage. It's a mani-pedi. It's going to yoga. And so before anybody like comes at me about their yoga or their mani-pedi, I'm not saying that those methods are bad. I'm just saying that they're a method. And the reason that they don't always work is because we need to apply the principles, the internal work of real self-care in order to allow ourselves to actually have the methods. So I'll give you an example. This is the patient who, you know, and I'm like this too. You know, you finally work up the nerve to take an afternoon off, you clear your schedule, you're like so excited. You go to get a massage and you're paying like $200 for this massage. And then you spend the whole time on the massage table, like ruminating about your to-do list and worried about everything. And then you come back to your desk and you're like, oh crap, I need to be extra productive because I was away for a day.
I am that patient.
And I'm that person too, right? Yeah. And the reason that happens is because we're trying to employ a method mm-hmm. without doing the deeper work of the principles. And so you have to work those internal principles so that you can actually receive the massage, so that you can actually be present for it. And so the principles of real self-care are simple. Mm-hmm. They're hard, but they're simple. So setting boundaries and dealing with guilt.
Yeah.
Learning to talk to yourself with compassion. Getting clear on your values, like what actually matters to you, and then making decisions based on those values. And then lastly, understanding that this is actually power mm-hmm. and real self-care is how you reclaim power from these oppressive systems.
Yeah.
So that's four principles. And that is all invisible. That's all decision-making right. work. That's all internal work. So that's what you have to do in order to get yourself to the yoga class.
Do you need to be like tapping into those principles like every day so that when you get to the massage table, you can receive the massage? Like how do we?
Yeah. So I think of it as in two ways. So on one hand, let me rephrase that. This is the type of thing that should be, I don't want to say should because I hate that word, but it works best when it's threaded into all of your decision making. Yeah. So it works best when it's threaded into your big decisions about, like, you know, who you're going to partner with in your life, what type of career you're going to have, mm-hmm. how you're going to spend your free time, whether or not you're going to have kids or if you're going to have a second kid or a third kid, right? Those decisions.
Yeah.
Like real self-care needs to be part of those decisions. It's not just about like setting aside 15 minutes to meditate. It's right. actually in these decisions of your daily life. And I know that might seem kind of scary to hear that because when I have this conversation with folks, especially if you're coming to this feeling sort of lost or burnt out, or if you're kind of like, you know, maybe you had a kid or two and now you're kind of like, you feel like you're lost. You're just waking mm-hmm. up again and you're like, who am I? It can sort of feel overwhelming because if you ask yourself these questions, what if you're like, I don't really like what this is. I don't know how to feel good about it. I just want to also say, like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to make big changes. This is really about having a new type of conversation with yourself mm-hmm. and trying to find that thread again of like of your values, your identity, what really matters to you. And we can talk about examples of that or what that really looks like. But again, just kind of reiterating that it's not just like one choice and you just kind of like find this, you make one choice and then choose something else. It's more like lots of small decisions over time.
Yeah, I agree. Because I don't find stuff like massages or mani-pedis great. Right. And like, because I sit there and it's like my to-do list, I'm like, oh my gosh, this hour needs to hurry up so that I can get back to the things. Right. But then, you know, like for me, like self-care, I have four kids. We have a family of six. Like to me, self-care is doing my laundry every morning so that I'm not buried in laundry. Then I get overwhelmed and then it like trickles into other areas of my life and I don't want to be an overwhelmed mom. You know, I want to be present and nice and not shouty. And if, you know, the laundry pile's too big or the to-do list is not attainable, I don't know, you know, if there's all these stressors going on, then I'm not able to be present. And so like for me, I'm like, self-care has to be like taking care of all of these things so that I can show up and be what is aligned with me. Right. And am I like getting this right?
Yeah. Well, what I'm hearing is that your space really matters to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And kind of feeling like things are in order and things are sort of, and having sort of agency over the way that you show up in your family life is really important to you. And again, like thinking through like what you just described, like thinking through why starting out your day with getting the laundry done and having that be sort of a ritual.
Yep.
Like that's part of the whole process, reflecting on what works for you and what your own routine is. And everyone's is going to be different. Some people, you know, can – I'm a little bit the opposite, actually. I'm a really messy person.
Yeah.
My partner, Justin, you know, if you would ever listen, you'd be like, yes, she's really
she's really messy.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's everyone's different. So I'll give you an example, too.
I could see how, like, being messy and, like, maybe you came from, like, a family that, like, that wasn't allowed. And, like, part of your self-care has to be, like, having compassion and talking to yourself nice of – it's okay to have a messy home.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And everyone's definition is different, you know, of what works for them. So in the part of the book where in the third principle is kind of like getting clear on your values and really, because a lot of times, especially for my patients that are moms, it can be so hard to know like what you even like what even makes you happy because you spend so
especially much time like in that early stage.
Everything, you know, once you set a boundary and you're like, oh, I have like an hour of free time, it's really easy to just kind of be like, well, I don't even know what to do.
I guess I'm just scrolling my phone for an hour.
right. So in the section of the book where I talk about values, because, you know, everybody kind of throws – or we hear that term a lot. Like, what are your values? Live by your values. And I find that when you ask somebody point blank, well, what are your values? Either people freeze up or they give you sort of like the canned stock answer that they think they're supposed to say. So like, well, I really value compassion or I really value service. And it's sort of like, okay, great. But we want to get to like the other things. So I kind of come to it indirectly. So one of the examples or one of the thought exercises, the book has lots of different practical thought exercises and things like that. One of them is imagining that you are throwing a dinner party and you only have $200 to spend. What is your $200 dinner party going to look like? You know, are you going to have everybody dress up in costumes? Is it going to be themed? Are you going to have everybody sit down and play truth or dare, right? Like, or, you know, do you want people to bring gifts for each other? And so there could be like a zillion different ideas and ways that this comes to you. And again, this is a fantasy. Like the stakes are really low. That's how you have to find your values. It has to be in these types of really low stakes. Well, sort of like where there's the space for creativity, where then you could say, oh, what does this look like? Okay. Like, I really like humor. Like making sure everyone's having fun is really important to me. Or I really want everybody to like dress up in like just in their best showstopper attire. Cause I just really, beauty is important to me. And so I want to be able to surround myself with beautiful things. Right. And you don't, so those are the types of, when we say value, we mean like a quality of living, right? So for you, when you're talking about the laundry, like you're kind of talking about like order and mastery. And then how do you thread that into your life? So it can show up in your family life. Like if for you, humor and silliness is something that's really important when you're with your kids, maybe it's something about like, yeah, like when we're spending our time together on the weekends, we want to have spontaneity. We want to be able to just like pick up and do something and like have no plan. Or maybe if for somebody like you, Abby, that's like the worst possible scenario. It's like, we want to have our plan. We want to know, we want to have the structure, right?
I'm an itinerary right? kind of girl.
Yes, yeah. You're an itinerary person, right? And so you have to know what that is. And then that shows up in your life in different ways. So it's less about like, I'm going to do this one thing, and more about in all the day-to-day decisions that I make and how I structure my life, whether it's my career, whether it's my family life, I can use these values to as sort of like touch points to come back to
yeah.
and remind myself that this is the type of feeling that makes me feel like myself.
What if like some of our things that we're doing are from maybe not great places?
Yeah. And there right? will be, right? Because we're human.
And so like, and do we need no to like push ourselves to be more something else? Like, is that more self-care for us? Or is leaning in and having compassion for ourselves and like, it's okay, girl, you just like be who you are and whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe go get some therapy, but like,
yeah,
you know?
I think that I'm going to give you like a therapist and my therapist answer, yeah. which yeah. is that only you know.
Right.
Right. There will be some situations where what you need is to stop avoiding and lean into something that feels a little bit uncomfortable or a new way of being. And then there will be other situations where like actually you are at your tank is totally empty and you're really brittle. And it really is like you just have to like zone out and do whatever you need to do to get through. But only you really know the answer to that. And like that's part of real self-care, because essentially the whole process, these four principles, it's about the conversation that you're having with yourself and having a new conversation with yourself instead of just like that running monologue that all moms have of like, I'm not doing enough, I'm so tired, I'm so guilty. Like, gosh, it's just so like exhausting to hear that same thing all the time. Turning that off and instead like asking yourself these new questions and like thinking more deeply and reflectively about what you want your time to be about and how you want to spend your energy and give your energy and what you want to model for
yeah,
yourself
that's a big
and
one.
For your kids.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a big one. Yeah.
And then also acknowledging that we all have our own individual circumstances and constraints, right? Like finances obviously makes a difference. Race makes a difference. Where you live in the country and what you have access to makes a difference, right? So it's like you have to acknowledge that the solutions that are available to you may not be available to everybody. And if you can come from a place of really giving yourself care, that's really the only way that then anybody has energy, like real energy, to try and change some of these toxic systems.
Yeah. I know. I guess like I'm like now kind of thinking of, you know, I think that like self-care gets like such a, it's like such a big buzzword, right? And it's takes on many different meanings depending on what social media platform you're landing on, I think. You've got some that are like yoga every day or the bath, the bubble bath, the mani-pedis, right? And then I see a lot now, I feel like that as like our modern motherhood has evolved and we're spread out from family, our village looks very different now. And now like kind of the shift is outsource, you know, ask for help, outsource, hire somebody to clean your house, hire somebody to do your laundry. I don't know, lean into like some of these outsourcey things. But I hate that because I think of the majority of people cannot be leaning into those things, you know? And so when we're in these spaces where maybe our village doesn't look the way that it did for previous generations, and we're going through financial ugh in our country right now. You know, I think a lot of people are feeling all kinds of things financially. how do we tap into some of like the self-care and coming back to what we value when maybe we're working more than one job, we've got multiple kids to feed, you know, and like that the stress is just like way outweighing what we value. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's reminding me of a conversation that I just had with a patient right before I got on this, where we were talking about, you know, and this patient, my patients live in Washington, D.C., which is a very high cost of living city, and to be a parent and paying for daycare and all the things that are on her plate. And, you know, kind of, she's a gig worker. And so kind of every week wanting to make sure she gets her hours in, right? And I can identify that with that too, as somebody who, I like to say I'm a freelance psychiatrist because I have my own practice and I'm self-employed and I have, I'm an entrepreneur. And, you know, so it's like there's all of these different competing demands, and I'm a mom and I have a 9-month-old, and everything is so expensive. And, you know, so to answer your question, I think, look, there's no, there is no magic solution. Right? There is no like easy answer here. Like I really, again, that's why real self-care comes back to decision-making, because there's always going to be pros and cons, right? There's costs to every decision that we make. So I think that the key, again, is understanding the meaning behind why you're doing what you're doing and what makes sense for you. So, you know, so we send our son to daycare. Right. And we're really fortunate to have a great daycare that's close by, and like that's within our means. Right. And so it's like, you have to kind of, I think, really acknowledge that, the choices have to be made. And I think like not be necessarily Pollyanna about it, but understanding that, there's still good to be had even in times of stress. I think the other thing that comes to mind here is that to really step back and allow yourself to unpack whether your overwhelm is something that is based on things that are in your control or out of your control. I think a lot of times, especially for moms, we take on responsibility psychologically for things that are just way out of our control. And we sit with that, and it weighs on us. And I think what I would love for many of my patients to do, and what I would love for myself to also be able to do, right? Part of this is like working on this, right? Is like to let go of the things that really you can't predict, you don't have control over, and you know, you kind of just have to take it day by day and like make the best choices that you can with the resources that you have, and sort of trusting that that you'll be able to figure it out. At Gemma, we talk about the term self-efficacy, which basically is a fancy psychological term for meaning that you know how to problem solve. And even in challenging situations and challenging environments, you can believe in yourself to figure out a solution.
Yeah.
Not the solution, because there's usually not one solution. There's usually a bunch of different solutions.
Yeah. I know. I think like a big part of that is just like self-compassion, and just like I love, you know, kind of that reframe of looking at what you have control over versus what you don't. And I think like so much of our circumstances, you know, we have to kind of remove ourselves from our circumstance at times, you know, and I know that like this is a big struggle right now, but like this is just my deck of cards that I've got right this second, and I can take steps to make changes, and you know, maybe I'm going to work a second job right now and get out of the hole that I've dug myself, or whatever the situation is, right? And maybe things like suck right now, but you know, I'm going to be nice to myself about how I'm showing up, right? And I think like that's such a big shift, and especially for moms, you're so right, we do just take on so much that it's just not all ours to carry, for one. And for two, you know, I'm sure that you're doing a lot better than you think you are.
Yeah, yeah.
We're sweet. We are so hard on ourselves.
We are so hard on ourselves. And I think it comes from an innocent place.
I think so too.
It's a psychological defense, right? It's actually less scary to believe that you do have all of this control, because the alternative, which is the truth, is that there's so much that we don't have control over. And that's really terrifying as a mom.
It really is.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, that your little one is just out there in the world. And
it's a lot. And,
yeah. But I think sort of like this balance, right? And again, it's like there's always, you know, in real self-care, I'm talking about both and, which is like you're always kind of going back and forth to this middle ground of like, you know, yes, the world is on fire. So much is terrible. And I can show up in my own life and have agency over the choices that are impactful for me and my family. Like both are true.
It starts at home.
Yes, yes.
It starts at home. I know. Yeah. Like, we can all change the world if we just like change our little slice of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I really do believe in that. So the book has kind of like a roadmap or like a step-by-step program on getting you to some of these more practical, actionable self-care steps. Can you kind of walk us through like what that looks like?
Yeah. So the book is, like I mentioned, the four principles, setting boundaries, developing self-compassion, understanding your values, accessing your power. And each of these principles build on the next. So, you know, with boundaries, that's you kind of like setting your space, your boundaries kind of in your pause, and really making space for the care that you want to bring into your life, or, you know, what that looks like. And then, you know, the next step there is that, of course, once you start to set boundaries, you feel guilty, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to learn to work with that guilt and then develop self-compassion, right? Yeah. And for yourself, and have a different conversation. And the crux of it is, like we've been talking about, getting clear on those values of like, what is your why? And not just your why, but also your how. Like, I'm really interested in the how, because I've spent so much of my life being like super goal oriented, you know, like I'm going to get into med school. I'm going to, you know, be a psychiatrist. I'm going to do this thing. And I kind of forgot about the how, you know, like, well, how do I want to feel when I'm traveling to all these places?
Yeah.
Right. And that's the dinner party, sort of like the exercises that really focus on like, okay, here's this scenario. How do you show up? Like, what's really important to you? How do you carry yourself? How are you, what are you wearing? You know, like, what is this really like? Visualize it and think about what really feels like you. And that how, you know, there's a lot of this is kind of coming from acceptance and commitment therapy, which is a type of psychotherapy. And there's a teacher, Russ Harris, who he gives a great description about values and the how. So he says, like, you know, if you're driving on a car trip with your kids, on a road trip, you know, the goal might be like you're driving to the Grand Canyon, right?
Yeah.
But the how is like, there's so many different ways that you could spend that car ride. You could spend the car ride, you know, playing games, like counting license plates, just like having a grand old time listening to music. Or you could spend that car ride like gripping and cursing traffic and everybody screaming and super angry, right? And those are two completely different experiences.
Yeah.
So the how is like, that's the crux of like, well, what is your how? Is your how, are you the type of person that sort of like is always, you know, just like I think for me, self-expression and showing up authentically is really my how. Like, I want to be able to be in conversations and situations where I can really feel like I'm able to be myself and also be of service, like providing useful information. We all have a different blueprint for that, so I think like that's sort of the work of figuring that out.
You're really good at that though.
Oh, thank you.
Showing up
you're
authentically,
sweet.
You know, like you do that on social media, like at the beginning of this podcast episode, just like sharing your story and like connecting your knowledge to like, hey, the real person, you know, you're really good at
thank you.
Walking that walk and sticking to that value for yourself.
Well, and maybe I'll share an example, a personal example too, of like how I got to that was also, again, real self-care in the decision-making, because after I graduated residency, I came on the full-time faculty at GW for 3 years, and I was doing sort of like the straight-laced academic researcher. I was doing global mental health, and I hated writing academic stuff. It was so boring for me. All my papers were getting rejected, and that's when I started my Instagram account, and I realized, actually, I like writing for real people better because it allows me to be myself, and so that's when I transitioned to freelance, but I had to follow that thread, right? I didn't know where it was going to lead. I knew that I wanted to be in a work role where I could bring more of myself to it, but I had to sort of like create that path for myself and figure out what it looked like. And there was a lot of uncertainty. And I've talked about this before, like part of it was privilege of having a partner who has a regular employed job with great benefits that was on his health insurance. So I could step away. Right. And I still had health insurance and so the structures impact our capacity to make some of these choices. But I think like part of this process of real self-care is that you have to start to be okay with the uncertainty of like not really knowing where it's going to lead and allow yourself to follow these different threads. I'll give you an example from my practice, just again, tying it back to systems. So a patient that I worked with went through this, you know, we kind of were in therapy working together, and she started setting boundaries and working on her self-compassion, and she came to understand that she was actually quite angry at her husband because they had two kids, and her husband had actually never taken a paternity leave the whole time. Even though they had two kids. And so when she got pregnant with her third baby, she had multiple really hard conversations with him and said, look, I really want you to ask your employer. And he worked for a small startup. And so he did ask, and they actually said yes. Because they were like, we need to be competitive, like in order to retain talent. And so they did grant him a paternity leave, and that change went on to impact everybody else at that workplace. You know, my patient wasn't doing this to like be an activist or an advocate or anything like that. She was just
needed help.
Like, she needed help, right?
She's like, I'm drowning over here.
Exactly. And like, I want a more equitable relationship and partnership. And that's where it led, right? So it's like, again, like we were just saying, you know, the way you show up in your family life, in your relationships, in your friendships, like that has cascade effects. And I think we have more power than we realize we do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that there's a great ripple effect from all the decisions and things that we set out and do.
Like, I'm sure that you didn't start out this podcast sort of thinking that it would be something that was going to kind of speak to so many moms and like be a space to right to talk about mental health and all these other things, like
I know, I was really like identifying with like kind of your journey of, you know, like going into like your career path, and then it's like, I hate this. This is not what I want to do, you know, because I'm also a clinician, and I still like see therapy clients, but like on You the Mother and like my platform on social media, I feel like I don't really fit into any box where there's a lot of like clinicians that show up and they're, you know, all their educational content, you know, and it's like so great that they're doing that. That's not the content I'm creating. And I don't feel like I fit into like the influencer box either. And I just like, I don't know what I, but I like how I show up, and I just like kind of speak my experiences and build that like community and support with people. And I talk a lot about like my estrangement with my mother now on my social media platform, and like offering that space, and like, because I so badly needed a community when I started that journey, and now I'm like doing that for other people. And I don't know, there's been like other parts of my motherhood that I think I've kind of done that in this space, but that's like really important to me, is community, helping people, you know. And entrepreneurship is a roller coaster, though.
It is absolutely. I mean, fully. Gemma is fully bootstrapped, and it is fully a roller coaster. But I appreciate what you're saying, Abby, because I think I often feel like that too. Like, I don't fit into any one box. I have kind of a foot in lots of different boxes. Yeah. And I
because you've like shared very personal stories on your social media and your journey. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, I've come to realize that that's not an accident. Yeah. I think I actually feel more comfortable.
Same.
Being in lots of different boxes because it allows me to kind of have my hands in a lot of different stuff. Yeah.
It can be overwhelming also at times.
It can be overwhelming. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's, like, it's
maybe
it's,
not every hand. Maybe we don't need to be in every single one. Then it's fine. We're overachievers. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, curious by nature, likes to, you know, novelty, likes to try different things. You know, so.
But I agree. I like the authenticity that you were talking about. I was like nodding hard. Like, yes, same, you know. I want like deep, meaningful relationships. And so I feel like in order to create those, like you have to show up vulnerable and, you know, some level of authentic. And sometimes that gets really lost on social media. So I think, you know, when people find those spaces and they really connect with you, it's really beautiful. And it's a privilege to kind of have those spaces and be that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it is, obviously there's so much that we know is terrible about social media.
Yeah.
And I always have to acknowledge though that, if it weren't for social media, I wouldn't have been able to build what I've built in my career. And you know, just last week I met a woman while I was on the book launch who said she found my Instagram account while she was pregnant. Her own psychiatrist had taken her off medication because he said that she wasn't, you know, it wasn't safe, which is not true. Right. Yeah. And she found my account. And because of my account, she was able to find another specialist who, you know, put her back on her medication. And, you know, so it's like, no, this, there is good that happens.
There's
here.
A lot of good. Yeah.
It's,
you just got to have great boundaries around your social media usage. Yes. Be really mindful of who you're following. Right. Yeah.
Who you're following and what you're trying to get out of it and understanding what it can provide and what it can't provide.
Yeah.
So
I could like see like kind of your checklist around like just like social media, you know what I mean? Like, like, kind of bringing some of those checklists along with you into each pocket of your life. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And again, it's like different for everybody. And it's also even different based on what feeling state you're in. Mm-hmm. You know, like there might be some days where social media is great depending on your mood and like the reserve that you have. And then there might be some days where it's like, nope, you just got to step away. Right. Yeah. So it's like knowing yourself and knowing what your own, needs are in that moment, and it's very dynamic, I think. So
Dr. Pooja, thank you so much for having this conversation with us. I think I already said it, but I think, you know, self-care gets like so glamorized in all these other ways, but it is just like so much just being true to you. And I think that I hope everybody goes and picks up your book and walks through that roadmap, because
I'm going to hold it up again. Yes. It's called Real Self-Care. And it is available in all the places that you can buy books, Amazon, Bookshop. There's an ebook. There's also an audiobook, which I recorded myself.
Did you?
And yeah, I did. I narrated it.
So exciting.
It,
yeah.
So fun. So that is great. Because it's, you know, I'm,
is that already out now?
Then it'll be audiobook? Out on March. It'll be out when this one comes out. So March 14th.
Yeah.
So, and so that's almost like being in the office with me because I narrate it. So, so yeah. And also you can also find me at Gemma Women, GEMMA. We have lots of different offerings there, beta membership courses, WhatsApp threads. And yeah, I'm just such, so it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah.
Hopefully next time I'll be back, sooner.
yes, I agree. Let's make that happen. Thank you so much again for joining me. I will be linking all of that in the description of this podcast. And thank you for helping me support you, the mother. Thanks.